Session number 26981, Betty Bowden, Reel 1.
Betty Bowden, Reel 1. Can you tell me first of all where you were born?
A little village called Old Netley, near Southampton.
And were you an only child? Or?
No, I was the last of four. I had three older brothers.
And you went to school locally, did you?
First of all, it was the little school at Butlock's Heath, which was near Netley Abbey. And then I got a scholarship to the county high school at Eastleigh. And then after that, when I left there, I went to a commercial college, Clark's College in Southampton.
And you were doing what sort of typing?
Well, I learnt bookkeeping and general office procedures and all that kind of thing.
So you've done well at school?
Yes, well enough. Got the school certificate. And
and so that was before the war?
No, the war started... I was 14 when the war started.
Right.
So... during the well, part of the time going to school, I had to walk to the bus stop, then go on a bus for a couple of miles, then walk to the station, which was Woolston, Southampton, take a train to St Denis, Southampton, change trains and go to Eastleigh station, past the aerodrome, and then walk about a mile to school. So during the war, quite often, various parts of the track were bombed, and we had to go so far and get on a bus and so on. And towards the end, when I was doing my exams, things were so bad that I used to cycle the whole way.
Because the South Coast was so badly.
Yes, yes. And when I was doing my exams, several times we had to down pens, go to the shelters, not allowed to speak to each other while we were in the shelter, back, carry on with the exam. And I remember one day on my way home on my bicycle, planes came over. And I had to dive into a ditch and pull the bicycle on top of me. And the plane was machine gunning. And anyway, we survived.
But you saw a lot of what was going on in a sense, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Did you ever have any plans to join the female services?
Well, in 1938, you remember when... Chamberlain went to Munich and came back with his bit of paper. Everybody knew that it was only a short respite, and plans were made for recruiting, and leaflets were sent out, and I made up my mind then that I was going to join the Women's Royal Naval Service.
Why the naval service?
Well, the third brother, the one nearest to me, he had joined the Fleet Air Arm just before the war in 1938. And my father's brother had been in the Navy in the First War, and my mother's brother had been in the Navy. So the Navy was a senior service anyway. So
you went on to your commercial college.
Yes.
And how long was that course?
Well, that course was a year, but before I'd finished it, they asked me to join the teaching staff. So there was I, straight from behind the desk to standing in front of a class in another. So I did that for a while, and then my eldest brother, he was in the military police then, as traffic control. He was killed, and that affected me greatly. So I said I wanted to go to take his place. So, unknown to my parents, I went along to the recruiting office and applied to join the Wrens. And a bit later, fortunately, one lunchtime, I was in the office at the commercial college when a phone call came through asking what subjects I taught. So I told them. And they said, oh, well, that's right, you're not teaching shorthanded typing. If you were, you couldn't join up. So I was very fortunate that I took the phone call. And so I was eventually allowed to join.
Right. So where did you have to report to when you joined?
Leeds.
And you went off on the train?
Went up to London first and stayed one night with my second brother, who was then living at Twickenham, Teddington. And then he put me on the train in the morning to go off to Leeds.
Yeah. And what sort of place were you going to?
We were picked up in a 3-ton lorry and taken out to Headingley to the Wesley College, Methodist Training College, which had been taken over by the Wrens. So there was this beautiful building that we were in.
So what was it like arriving there with lots of other girls, I suppose?
Well, naturally it was rather strange, but exciting. And
did they put you in dorms?
No, we were the trainee priests that had their rooms. We were, I think it was 4 to a room. So we had 2 double bunks. I remember that part of it. And as I say, it was all very exciting.
And did you get uniforms straight away?
No, no. Well, uniform of a sort. It was more like prison uniform. It was a drab blue overall and black stockings, black shoes. And we were not allowed out for 2 weeks. We did basic training. We were taught a bit about the Navy and service life and so on. And then after 2 weeks, we were free to go home at any time if we didn't like it. And after a couple of weeks, we were enrolled.
Did many people drop out?
No. Right. Then we were issued with proper uniform. And when I had joined, I thought I wanted to be a radio mechanic. But when I got there after the initial training, he said, no vacancies for radio mechanics. Is there anything else you like? So I'd like to be an air mechanic. So, well, no vacancies at present for an air mechanic. There might be in a week's time. If you still want to do that, we'll put you in the galley for a week. And then we'll see at the end of the week. And you're still free to get... plain language.
Yeah. So what did you feel about that?
Anything to try to get what I wanted. The most vivid memory of that week was boxes and boxes and boxes of frozen cod. And there were 2 of us on this week. And we had to go to the galley early in the morning and flake this frozen fish. And for the whole week, the menu in various forms was cod. So just imagine a frozen cod. Anyway, at the end of the week, sorry, no vacancies for air mechanic. You either become a writer or you go home. I said, well, I'm not going home, all the trouble I had to get here. So, right, I had to do my training as a writer. Other services call them clerks, but in the Navy, you're a writer. And there were writers, shorthand writers, typists, and writers general duty. So I opted for general duty, which I thought was far more interesting than, I certainly didn't want to do copy typing. So then we did the training.
What did the training entail? Because you were pretty well trained already, weren't you?
Well,
commercial stuff.
It was the way things are done in the Navy. And you had to learn about King's regulations and Admiralty instructions. And one thing I remember being taught was how to pin papers together so that the Admiral didn't prick his fingers. We were shown exactly how to insert the pin so that the point was covered.
And who was doing this teaching? These women, I presume.
No, the actual instructor was a petty officer writer in the Royal Navy. All the others were Wren. You know, the general training was all done by Wrens, but the specified training was done by a petty officer writer. We learnt all about captain's defaulters and what the punishment was for which default. I won't call them crimes because they weren't. And all that kind of thing. And I forget how long the training lasted. I think it was 3 or 4 weeks. And then we had an exam at the end. And I passed that with about 93%. Then the next thing was finding out where we'd got to serve. And as far as possible, you'd be sent to your home division. And as I'd come from near Portsmouth, I was sent to Portsmouth. And a lot of the people I'd trained with were sent to Chatham because they were they lived in that direction. And I went to what they called a holding depot in Portsmouth, in Southsea, mm-hmm. which was actually in a hotel that had been requisitioned. And I was there about a week until my draft came through to Sea Serpent. The thing I remember most about that place was the galley was down in the basement and we were up at the top. It was going down all these flights of stairs right down to the basement and having, of course you wouldn't remember dried egg. dried scrambled egg for breakfast. But anyway, then my draft came through. I was to go to HMS Sea Serpent at Brackelsham Bay.
Tell me about Sea Serpent.
Now, I arrived there at Chichester Station and was taken again in what we used to call a tilly, a utility vehicle, out. How many miles would it be? 2, 3 more miles? From Chichester to Brackelsham?
About 3 to 4.
Three, yeah. Right out onto the coast, and it seemed very bleak. And we went to another hotel, the Brackelsham Bay Hotel. That was the headquarters. But my quarters were another half mile down the road in a house that had been taken over. It was sort of a summer residence, really, two stories in the middle, and either side lean to one story beds. And there I was put in the upstairs cabin, because rooms were always cabins, and there were eight of us in that. It was quite a large cabin. And my duties were in the captain's office, which was in the hotel, upstairs in the hotel. And
so you had to, when you're on your first day, were there other more senior wrens to introduce you? You know, was it all formally done?
I don't really remember.
Who was your captain then?
The captain, when I first went there, was Commander Bickford, who's quite an elderly man. The Wren officer was I think the first one was second officer Elizabeth Evans, later to become, no, she was third officer, and she was later promoted to second officer. As Commander Bickford, we had, there was one office for the writers. There was a leading Wren writer, and writer, typist, and myself. Next door was the captain's night cabin, and then round the corner in the hotel was his day cabin, and next to that was the captain's secretary's cabin. Well, to begin with, I was in the writer's office, and then I was transferred to the secretary's office, you know, as the preparations built up for D-Day.
So what, explain to those who don't know, this, the business of Sea Serpent, what sort of a base was it?
Well, it was a combined operations base. There was the hotel almost on the beach. There was Jeeks, that was our house. That was to the east of the hotel. Then to the north of the hotel was this, what had been the ideal holiday camp. And that's where Charles was later on. And then over to the northwest, there was another holiday camp. It was Gibson's holiday camp. Then further away, there was the boat base at Birdham. And then further away again was the tented camp at Itchenor. So we were well spread out.
Mm. So you were arriving there in sort of autumn 1943.
Yes.
What was the main thrust of the work then? What were they preparing for D-Day?
It was gradually building up for D-Day. The boats were being gathered together, the crews for those boats, and the troops to go, I say boats, landing craft they were, and then the troops to go across on them.
Yeah. So what was this commander like to work for?
Commander Bickford, it was very pleasant, as I say, elderly gentleman. But as the build-up came, they put a more senior... They put this foreign captain, Captain Wally Ayres, and he had been in charge of the physical training school in Portsmouth. And he had been a fighter. And he was not the nicest of people. He could be a bully, but if you stood up to him, he was no trouble at all.
Sounds as though you got on with him okay.
I was a bit afraid of him at first, but then there was one occasion that when I was moved into the captain's secretary's office, there was a telephone on the wall which went through to his office. So if he wanted a line, he would pick up his phone, ring the bell, and I or whoever was there would pick up, and he would say who he wanted, and we would cut him off and then get the person and then ring him through. And there was one day when he was in a particularly bad mood, and I was supposed to know who that was. So I got who I thought he'd asked for, the base engineer officer, and put him through and waited a second to find out if it was the right person. It wasn't. So I cut off the unfortunate man who'd got shouted at. And he said he had asked for somebody else. I said, well, if you'd only speak plainly, we know who you wanted. And cut him off quickly. I never had any more trouble with him after that. But if I just curled up, he would have gone on bullying. But,
was it quite a happy office there?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, mm. Yeah. Yes, then, as you know, the actual landings on D-Day was postponed for 24 hours. But all the landing craft had gathered up in the Solent. And my office looked out across the Solent. And sort of... one evening we looked out and the sea was absolutely full of vessels of various sizes. Most amazing sight. And we went into the office on the morning of the 6th of June and the sea was absolutely empty. The camp was empty. Everybody had gone. It was an awful feeling of emptiness.
And had you known going to happen then?
Well, we didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but we knew that the invasion was coming. Yeah.
But you, even in that office, you
no.
didn't know which day it was?
No.
That's extraordinary. Well,
the officers knew, but then about 9:30, I suppose, or something like that, somebody sent up a shout and said, it's on the radio. And you can believe it. This secret invasion was being broadcast on the radio. So we left the office and scooted down to the paymaster's office where this radio was, or wireless as it was in those days. And we were listening to them giving a running commentary on these people landing on the beach, which absolutely horrified us. And then Captain Eyre's voice came bellowing down the corridor. We'd left the office empty. So, back to work.
So, were you able to, I suppose you followed the progress of the invasion on the radio
yes.
over the next few days, yeah.
One of our flotillas, was it 611 flotilla, wasn't it, that got lost on
yeah,
the way
I think
back?
It was 611.
And practically everybody there was lost. And there's a memorial to them now at Itchenor. And my friend who was in the first lieutenant's office, she was my bridesmaid. She had the awful job of notifying the next of kin of all these people and gathering their personal belongings, which had all been left behind, and doing them up and sending them off to the next of kin.
How awful. And she did that on her own, did she?
Well, with some help. But it was a heartbreaking job for her. And then after that, things quietened down. And that was when you came back, wasn't it? He appeared in my life.
Right. That gave you something to think about. Then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then, because the things were gradually wound down after the invasion. And bit by bit, the Sea Serpent was closed down. And the Captain Ayres went, didn't he? And the First Lieutenant, Commander Mason, he took over as commanding officer. And the next job was the demob of various people, wasn't it?
Oh, that's yeah. Right, yeah.
Oh, one job I had to do was to sort out when the medals became available, sorting out who was eligible for what medals and putting their claims in.
So how has that worked out? Because there's always a lot of comments from ex-servicemen about, oh, well, of course, if you were so-and-so, you'd have got a medal. But then,
These are ordinary campaign medals,
right,
not merit.
Yeah.
It was a case of between certain dates in certain areas, you're eligible for the certain medals and so on.
So
I had part of the job was doing that. And another part of it was keeping next of kin records up to date. Because before they all went off, they'd all had to fill in new next of kin forms to make sure they were all up to date. Then, as I say, bit by bit, Sea Serpent was closed down. The hotel was closed down, and I was sent down to Burdham to carry on there.
Oh, yes.
B-I-R-D-H-A-M.
Thank you. And whereabouts is that?
It's all near Chichester.
Right. And what sort of a place was that?
That was another private house, very nice private house, that the Wrens had taken over. And then That was near to the boat base. Actually, I was the last Wren to leave Burdham because I stayed on one day after everybody else had gone. Because by then, I'd learnt to operate the switchboard. And because there were no other Wrens there, the Wren officer had gone, I had to stay with a private family next door for that last night. And that was very nice. They'd got a lovely house with an ensuite sort of granny annex that I was put into. And then back to Southsea. Actually back to barracks, wasn't it, to Royal Naval Barracks at Portsmouth. And then after a very short time, because by then I'd got my wedding arranged, and we were married on January the 26th, so I'd arranged my leave that I went back on the 28th of January,
1946,
picked up my DMOB, and that was it.
Betty Bowden, end of reel one.